Hello, you're listening to a podcast of the best bits of Breakfasters with Mon, Bron and Daniel. For this week, ending Friday, May 29, 2026, we're on Triple R every weekday morning, broadcast live from 6 to 9am on Wurundjeri Country. Coming up on the pod this week, Bron had a pet rabbit who went missing and you'll never guess where they found her. And Vance Joy fan and Chinese-Australian journalist Cheng Li joined us to discuss her new play, 1154 Days, about her time incarcerated by the Chinese government.
And Rachel Bettines was in to review a time-travelling tradwife in Yesteryear by Caro Claire Burke. And Friday funny bugger Freddie Arthur described a very suggestive defecation.
Dr. Jen opened our eyes with weird science on sleep and we peeled back the rights and wrongs of leftovers.
Triple R.
When I moved down from Brisbane to Melbourne, I moved down with a friend of mine, Grace, and I don't know if you know about this, but the biggest difference between Queensland and Victoria is you can own a rabbit here.
You can own a what?
Rabbit.
You can't own rabbits in Queensland?
You cannot. They are illegal pets. The only people you can get a special permit if you're a magician. And that's the only time. So if you ever meet someone in Queensland with a rabbit, they're a massive loser.
Just like the layers of that. Like you want a rabbit so bad you get a permit.
You have to be a magician.
It's like, no, it's for work anyway.
And to get the permit, you have to do a trick in front of me.
I can't just pull a cat out of a hat. That's got to be a rabbit.
It's a bit of a cliche, isn't it?
I've already set all my pigeons on fire.
No one's pulling rabbits out of hats anymore.
Yeah, it's like how the circus doesn't have animals anymore. I'm dead against it.
Well, that's the only way you get a rabbit in Queensland. So when we moved down, she was like, I'm going to get a rabbit. This is very exciting. Mm. And she went and she got I think it was like off Gumtree or Marketplace, but there were these people
bad start.
It's not a great start. Okay, here's a bit of redemption. She inquired about this rabbit and they were like, she's had too many litters, we're done with her. And then Grace was like, I'm going to go save this rabbit. Mm. So she went and got the rabbit, rescued her, named her Sharon. So we had Sharon the rabbit in the house.
This is what happens when too many people from Queensland come to Victoria.
Just call it Peter and be done with it.
No, it was Shaz, and she had kind of free reign of the house. She was very sweet. She's great, great rabbit. We taught the border collie to look for her. So if you go, where's Sharon? She go find her, sit beside her.
Oh, it's cute.
It's very cute, very fun. She loved it outside to the point where if it was raining, you'd have to go out and get her and be just like, Sharon, God, what are you doing? Come back in. But unfortunately, one day we lost Sharon, as in she had escaped, could not find her anywhere. And we were calling the pound every day, like, has anyone handed in a rabbit? We're putting posters up around the neighbourhood.
Did Sharon have a collar?
She
didn't have a collar. Do you put?
I guess because ideally they're not meant to get in. Get
what
out.
Do I look like?
They're
a
not supposed to get out.
I've been wondering what's in that top hat all morning.
But she got out, and it was maybe a week later. We hadn't seen Sharon. A friend came over to stay, and she was. We had a sofa bed in the lounge room, and she opened up the sofa bed. She said, "I've found Sharon."
Oh no.
Still alive.
Oh, my God. How long had it been?
Like almost a week.
Oh, what?
It was crazy. So it was like this – she must have gotten herself in there and couldn't get back out, but it was one of those ones where there's like a box underneath where you put all the bedding.
Yeah.
And it pulls out. She was stuck in that little box, couldn't get out, found her. She was okay.
This is actually the start of a magic trick.
Maybe she was a magician's rabbit. Yeah.
That's it. She's like, when are they going to pull me out?
All right, I found the false bottom. Oh, now what happened? We immediately threw out the couch. We're like, this can never happen again. Got her to the vet. Vet's like, yeah, she's fine. But we had a friend at the time who worked at news.com. And Grace was just telling him this story. And he said it in the office. And his boss or editor was like, yeah, write that up. So Sharon
ended up... That's news.
That's news.
Okay.
Of course. So Sharon ended up in news.com. And it got back to Queensland. One of my cousins read the article and then was at like a family event and was like, have you seen this online? Didn't Bronwyn just get a rabbit? This sounds like something that would happen to her because she's an idiot. And my mum said, yes, that is, she is an idiot and that is her rabbit.
Oh, my God. Your reputation is so clear as a bad pet owner that the only rabbit owner in Melbourne had to be a Queenslander. That's a bad job.
Wow. Yeah.
So then how much longer did Sharon live with you after that?
Sharon is still alive. She Grace moved over to London to follow her dreams and rehomed Sharon with some friends. And we still get Sharon updates.
Wow.
She also only has three legs. That's another thing about Sharon. But
did she have three legs when you got her?
No. It was a very tragic accident and it was like not our fault and we rushed her to the vet. And you know what? Some people would have put her down, but we paid a lot of money for her surgery and she's still going. She's 12, I think, because we got her when she was a bit older. So, yeah, she's going all right.
If anyone's looking for a pet sitter,
yeah,
don't get Bronwyn.
Shazza's been really put through the ringer.
Shazza had been put through the ringer, but these are just kind of some lowlights from Sharon's stay with us. But we also did care for her and looked after her.
Mm. Yeah.
And she
liked it in the couch.
She liked it in the couch. Yeah,
she was cozy in there and she was just remembering her magic days. Place of quiet reflection. She was just
chilling out, eating the duvet.
Well, now I see why you're not allowed to have them up there.
Yeah, that's why you're not allowed to have them in Queensland.
So what sort of updates do you – is there a Sharon newsletter? Does she have a social media account? Is there texts, photos?
Just a couple of texts and messages that go to Grace and then Grace lets me know. I go, how's Sharon going? She's like, yeah, apparently. She's always been a little bit moody. She's kind of like a cat in that sense. So she wasn't ever that cuddly, but every now and then she will come over. And this is what the people who have her now are reporting. Mm. She will just kind of, when they're working from home, sit at their feet, and then as soon as you go to touch her, she runs away. But she,
and you just, so on you're her sure terms, that,
she's going great.
And the missing leg was not a saw in half trick gone wrong.
That's it. That was another magic trick. You're like, no, you don't actually saw them. It is an illusion.
Independently yours, Triple R.
102.7.
Chung Lei is a veteran journalist, TV presenter and business reporter, former news anchor for China Global Television Network and former China correspondent for CNBC, who in 2024 received the Press Freedom Award after being detained in China on false charges of espionage. Now the columnist and author of Memoir of Freedom is hitting the boards in a new theatrical production, 1,154 Days, billed as a reflection on freedom, resilience and creativity, which tells the true story of her detention and eventual release. And here to tell us about it ahead of its premiere at Arts House in North Melbourne, the journalist and music lover joins us now. Chung, welcome to Breakfasters.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Wow. You're reflecting on music earlier just as it was playing. Can you speak to that and how through your ears it's refreshing to hear music?
Oh, it's mind-blowing to be at a radio station. I'd always loved radio. It was how I learned English, just listening to top 40 hits and DJs bantering. So, comics like Martin Malloy. But when you're in such a place of deprivation, it really cuts a hole in you. Mm. And you say to yourself, I cannot believe it. It's been how many months and how many years that I haven't listened to music? So any grab of music that you can think of, you start just amplifying it in your head. And that was how I started teaching my cellmates to sing.
Oh, wow. What songs did you have on a loop that you couldn't get rid of? What earworms got you?
The thing is, I don't want you to ever be in captivity, but the music eventually dwindles and dies, and because you have no input, you have no stimulation, so you have to dig up anything that you know. Your memory shrinks.
Yeah.
Your world is one little cell, and it is colorless and soundless, and everything that is fun or human feels and probably is prohibited. So you for me, it was all my teenage, growing up in suburban Melbourne in the 80s, all the 80s daggy hits. And I remember one DJ remarking on, oh, the only song that you taught them that was relatively recent was Riptide by Vance Joy. believe me, that is a hard song to teach to Chinese cellmates. They're like, who's Michelle Pfeiffer? And I had to go to doing a whole lesson.
Amazing.
Oh, that's so good.
All right, so what's going on? How come you're on the stage? Why is this the best medium for your story, do you reckon?
It's part of freedom of expression, and it's part of loving, like, why I'm here at 8 o'clock in the morning instead of doing it via Zoom. I love seeing people, and for such a long time, I could not talk to real people. Mm. I could, even though for the first part of my captivity, there were two guards who were stuck to me every minute of the day. I couldn't speak to them. Mm. And again, it really, it's deprivation that leaves a big hole. And this is part of refilling that. And I love being able to read. Again, it's better than TV, which is the medium that I usually work in, where you're staring down the barrel of the camera. This is heaps better. See real people.
Preaching the converted here, I think. And now, you've mentioned, doing journalism and maybe having to massage a message or being told to have a message for... you spoke to Dylan, basically, yes. Dylan Byrne on Triple R previously, yes. And spoke to the idea of the propaganda that is fit for people who are maybe bilingual or versus the people who, you know, don't speak many languages. And I'm wondering how you think in terms of theatre and pitching content at a different audience.
Well, it's a Melbourne audience, right. Which means the loveliest audience in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think the story is about contrasts. It's about a very, very restrictive system. It's about state power versus the ability that is in all of us to find freedom within, to use imagination to literally break out of the cells, of the steel bars and concrete walls. And I think that is something that's universal. Even though my story is personal, I'm not the only one going through a hard time or being detained. And even during COVID, people had similar experiences. How do you get through those bleak times? Mm. And you have so many coping mechanisms. And perhaps sometimes our lives are too comfortable for us to be resourceful enough to fight it.
Because no one would begrudge you just sitting on your hands and chilling out after what you've been through, but you like to challenge yourself.
It's a little bit of that, but also I think I'm in a really privileged position to be free to say things that some with ties to China might be too afraid or too involved to say. Mm. And I think that's important because China is complex. China is contradictory. And you should look closer. You should always see it with nuance. And I deeply resist simplistic narratives. And I see polarized opinions on China. And for me, that's wrong. So this is part of filling that gap. But it's also a mix of documentary truth and theatrical language. It's making people feel. It's taking them into the cell and into my head to see how you can actually survive and come out a better person.
Has creativity always been something that's important to you?
Yes, it has. And I think it's a saviour for so many of us because this is how you deal with pain and life is full of it. I used to sort of silently chant this Zen Buddhist mantra, which is life is full of suffering, everything is in flux. Only when you stop grasping can you find peace of mind. And I think we place a lot of emphasis on finding happiness, but it's the serenity that actually tides us through life.
We've seen footage of you treated indelicately, which is probably a soft way to describe it. Do you ever concerned about your safety, even wandering around Australia at any point, or are you worried that the Chinese Communist Party is going to buy all the tickets to the Arts House and no one's going to turn up? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm very much aware that transnational repression is going on. For example, the Chinese student who studied at University of Sydney and then went back to China and then was sentenced to 6 years for having taken part in pro-democracy activities, protests in Sydney. And does the Sydney say anything about it? No. So, and I know that people have told me the Chinese embassy in Canberra, they can actually see people who make anti-CCP, anti-China comments on WeChat. And I know of journalists who have worked for foreign media abroad and then their families are intimidated. And then when they visit family in China, they are harassed, photos and contacts all copied from their phones. And even they attempted to coerce them to work for the state security apparatus. So there's so much that's going on. But I, to a certain extent, I think I'm protected by the fact that I'm so vocal, because people can see if something happens to me. Whereas if I were in the background, maybe in any case, I think speaking out is worth it.
Yes.
Worth the risk.
Your absence would be more noted were you to go away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
RRR, you've got to advocate for me.
Totally.
Do you feel a responsibility to speak out on behalf of others then?
Absolutely.
In the position you're in?
Because so many people did that for me, and it's time to return the favour.
Were you aware of the... Because sometimes when someone is in a situation similar to yours, an Australian overseas, it's the public is kind of advised to shut the hell up about it and let the diplomatic channels do their thing. Was there any... Are you privy to the diplomacy that's going on, or is it the less you know, the better? Can you speak to that at all?
I have complicated feelings about that. Sometimes I do question myself if my speaking out does do harm to diplomatic attempts to help the other imprisoned Australian Chinese writer, Dr. Yang Hengjun. But then Kylie Moore Gilbert, who was imprisoned in Iran, and Sean Tunnell, imprisoned in Myanmar, we have an alliance, and we have had so many discussions about whether going public is good or bad, because almost always families are shy about going public and they're almost always advised by DFAT to be quiet. But sometimes it, if done the right way, strategically, maybe public advocacy can help. It also puts pressure on the government, which the government wouldn't like, but maybe it's good motivation.
And you're temperamentally a truth teller as well.
Well, one would hope to be.
It's when, I don't mean for this to be naff, but given that you were blindfolded and driven to a secret location and detained for 1,154 days, is there anything about this performance that is like triggering, or it's like, oh, like if there's a blindfold, or is that a concern?
I don't have PTSD, or my kids joke, I have onions PTSD, because the boiled onions were the most hated menu item, like when that is all you have for dinner.
Wow.
So every time we walk past, 5 kilo, 10 kilo bags of onions, they will joke, oh, let's get one for Mum.
So you're done with onions and you're done with riptide.
No, no, no. But I actually think that I have come out relatively well, all things considered. But it's actually empowering to take my voice back in the face of the disinformation campaign against me in the Chinese, especially Chinese language world, where they paint me as a spy working for both the Americans and the Australians. Hello, CIA. Hello, ASIO. Can I get my paycheck? And that my parents were poor, so they forced me to sell out the mother country. Like, where do they dream up this stuff? So I think telling my story is actually makes me feel better that I can do something, that I finally have agency, I finally can listen to music and talk to you guys on Triple R.
And you're a funny person. Is there humour in the performance?
Would I have survived without
exactly,
humour?
Without
would the human race have survived without the ability to take the mickey?
Oh, beautifully said. Well, we could talk to you all day, but unfortunately we're crashing up against the news. 1,154 days is live performance by journalist Chung Lei, which makes its premiere at Arts House in North Melbourne Town Hall from the 28th to the 31st of May. Do you have any plans for after this, or what are your hopes for this?
I hope that I will be able to perform it for other audiences.
Mm. Yeah. Oh,
and there's a preview on Wednesday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Terrific. And
with cheaper tickets.
Okay. And so head to the Arts House North Melbourne website for more information.
Yes, please.
Okay. Love it. Chung Lei, brilliant. And Mon's mates with the Riptide. Is that right?
That was going to be an off-air conversation.
I'm jealous.
Chung Lei, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Triple R.
Here to talk books, we're joined from Tigerland by Tradwire from Central Casting, Rachel.
Good morning.
Morning, Rachel.
Lovely to be here after such a wonderful win on the weekend. Just rubbing it in here. All right, so today I brought in Yesteryear by Caro Claire Burke, which might just be the buzziest book of the year that I've seen going around. It's from debut author, like I said, Caro Claire Burke, and she's the co-host of Diabolical Lies, which is a politics and culture podcast that I wasn't super familiar with, but I know a lot of people do follow her work. This book has a great elevator pitch. The elevator pitch that the author sent to her agent when she came up with the idea for this book was: a modern and highly famous trad wife wakes up one morning to find herself stuck in the actual homesteading days. And so that's kind of what happens there. There were bidding wars for this book. It's obviously very zeitgeisty. Mm-hmm. People love kind of their tradwife content, Ballerina Farm, all that sort of stuff. I'm very lucky that my corner of the internet is very curated and it does not cross over into my space.
Did you say maybe Ballerina Farm?
Yeah.
I don't know that one.
I didn't really know it until I read this book either.
Okay.
And it's not referenced in it. This is completely fictional, but I know that the author did a lot of research and had written some nonfiction kind of like opinion pieces on tradwife culture. And then while she was doing that, she kind of had this, woke up one morning and had this idea for this novel. So there were bidding wars first for the book and then something like $2 million for the film rights to Amazon MGM. And Anne Hathaway is set to star and produce.
She's the only actor in the world.
She's having a tear,
right? She's 5 movies this year.
I know. It's like her and Zendaya and that is it. So you can see why this one is buzzy, because literally like they sent a PR package to Anne Hathaway. She's opening like, you know, the package with this book, a jar of jam and like a little like, you know, cross stitch saying, you know, like the kind of trad wife line. So it's been very...
Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but didn't Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie read The Simple Life?
Yeah. Yeah, true. That was early 2000s?
Yeah.
2010s?
But anyway, this is Yesteryear.
This is Yesteryear.
So a contemporary person goes back in time.
Yeah, that's what you think. So we've got two narrative threads. The past, they call it the past, which tells the modern day storyline, which is Natalie Hallamill has 6 kids. She's got another one on the way. And for all online, she looks like she's living the perfect Christian life. She has a placid cowboy husband, the farm, the barn, freshly baked sourdough in the morning. But of course, the life on Instagram doesn't quite reflect the reality of like the life that she's living on this farm. They've got paid farmhands, nannies, sparkling appliances all hidden from view, and a video producer to polish it all up and make it look like, you know, nice and schmick. But to the outside, she looks like she's, you know, like living this beautiful homesteader life, living those like traditional Christian values, all American kind of like life. And then she winds up in what is called the present in the book. I'm doing air quotes here. And in this timeline, she wakes up and everything is wrong. It's the same house, but the renovation is gone. There are no modern comforts. She has kids, but they're not the same kids that she had like before she woke up. They're like, she looks at them and she's like, these look like they're my children in that it looks like I birthed them. They look like, you know, you could tell what kind of progeny you would create, but they're not the children she had before she woke up there. They're different children. Her husband is off. All of a sudden he's like abusive. He keeps telling her that she isn't behaving like a dutiful wife. Like he's being like you would if you were in like 1885 and you were living this kind of like homestead life. So she doesn't know what's going on.
That is, by the way, not that I'm going to die in a ditch for people who are been dead for 200 years. Surely not everyone in 1885 was abusive.
Hashtag no. Not all homesteaders. Definitely not. But he's just a different... she wakes up and he's a different version of himself and she's not quite sure that it is her husband.
Dana's like, maybe she wasn't fulfilling her duties.
Yeah, maybe she wasn't.
Was
and
she
to be honest,
and obeying
to
what?
Be honest...
Was she nagging?
She was not obeying her duties because she's woken up and she's in this and she's like... walks up to her children and she's like, who are you? And they're like, Mama? Like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean?
Wow. Is it funny or is it scary?
So it's really strange. It was pitched kind of like, I feel like, as a satire. I know the author said, you know, I've written this dystopic and funny book. I didn't find it funny. I do think it is a satire, but I think in the way that it like exaggerates, it does, you know, it does those elements to kind of, you know, draw your attention to the absurdity of like trad wife culture and how far the, you know, the reality is of what we're seeing on Instagram today versus, you know, like what the reality would actually have been to live that life. But I didn't find it particularly funny. The character Natalie, she's awful. Like, she's really awful. So there's also that. So there's kind of like, and I feel like it's very readable, very page-turnery. There's lots of little cliffhangers dotted through as it dovetails between the timelines and you're trying to figure out what's happening because she doesn't know, is she being pranked? Is she unwittingly on reality TV? Is this some test of God? Has she really, like, time-travelled? Like, what's going on? So we weave between the two of them and it's, you know, reveals little by little how she built the kind of yesteryear ranch empire. She has her father-in-law is in politics. He's going to do a like presidential run. He's very, you know, like hard right conservative and she's kind of like on the coattails of that. Like she's independently wealthy through her husband and he's just kind of a bit of a, doesn't have much going on. He doesn't have much ambition. So she's like, I'm just going to plant him on this farm so he can like live out his cowboy, like, you know, like fantasies from when he was a kid. And then when a certain age hits, I'm going to like put him in the pipeline so he can become like a senator or something, you know, like to follow in the family footsteps. But everything starts to go kind of like wrong in that timeline, as it does obviously in the other timeline where she's woken up and she doesn't know where she is and what's happening. But it's, yeah, I didn't necessarily find it funny. And like I said, Natalie is awful. There's a part early on where her eldest daughter is hitting her teens and she asks her one day what a trad wife is. And this isn't a term that like Natalie has ever like used herself. So she realizes her daughter is getting outside influence from somewhere and like what's okay, could this possibly unravel? And so she spirals over this because she's used to having control and being able to choose when her children are like on film and her daughter starts to kind of push back on her and say, I don't want to be filmed. And she's like, but I've always told you, you can tell me if you don't want to be filmed. And she's like, you've never said that. Like, you know? And then Natalie's like, stupid bitch. Like, kind of like in her head. So you're in her like internal monologue the whole time. And she's just a terrible, terrible person. Mm. So I really feel like she's kind of been set up to have this really big fall. And it does feel kind of voyeuristic as you're reading it, because you're like, look at this awful woman, look at the life she's led, look at like all these people that she's, you know, bringing into her orbit and treating terribly, whether that's the staff that work for her, you know, like the farmhands, her husband, the kids that she, you know, she has her first kid and she has a difficult time bonding, and then she just kind of just keeps having children, and she has no interest in them. Like, really, she just doesn't really feel that kind of like motherhood in that way, but she's performing it online in a way.
Good
that,
content.
Yeah. Good content. Mm-hmm. It's all about the good content. Yeah. So it was quite interesting for me. I feel like the end third fell apart for me a little bit. Like I said, she's awful. The audiobook, which is how I read it, comes in at just under 14 hours, which is a really long time to spend with a really heinous person who is also kind of like the ultimate like unreliable narrator, because you really don't know what's going on necessarily in either of the timelines at certain points. I feel like she is written so irredeemably because she's been set up to fall, mm-hmm. and to really give that, like, she refers to any of the commenters on her like Instagram pages as like the angry women. Mm. Like, it's like, you know, like the liberal women that just like, you know, they don't let themselves be happy, but you see the whole way through that she's not happy either. Like, she's never happy in this. So like, that's where I feel like it's like satire, because it really is kind of like looking at that there.
Wow. So a ton of hype, I guess.
Yeah, a ton of hype. It's also really odd. The author has spoken about how she wrote the first draft in 9 weeks. I personally think maybe that shows a little bit. But then Anne Hathaway is thanked in the acknowledgements for being instrumental in bringing Natalie to life. So the fact that, like, this book went to, like, you know, auction, and then it got picked up for film, and then the producer and actor in said film that's going to be coming in, what, like, 2-3 years' time, I don't know how long these things take, had input in the book before the book was, like, fully
like a script
finished. Yeah. So obviously has come back and been like, no, I see Natalie more as like, I mean, I don't know what their working relationship would have been like.
What if they cast someone else? It's a long time.
Oh, yeah, it is a long time. Lots of things can happen.
Can you age
in that
out
time.
Of being a tradwire?
Yeah. Including Instagram and tradwires being ancient history by then.
I know. There's almost that thing where she started to write this in 2024. And now we're in 2026. And who knows, in 2 years' time, we could be like, oh, remember that time tradwives were a big, you know, thing? But I found this was interesting. Ultimately, for me, the ending didn't land. It's been, like, very divisive, like, reading lots of other people's, like, opinions about this book. So it's been a really fun book to read, because so many other people are reading it at the same time and everyone's, like, got an opinion on it. For me, I got to the ending and I was a bit like, what in the M. Night Shyamalan did I just read? All right. And I had to take a moment. Right. Yeah.
So what you're saying is everyone's a ghost.
Not exactly, no.
Oh, God.
No, I won't spoil it. Right. I won't spoil it.
Okay. Well, Rachel Bettines, of what have we been speaking?
We've been speaking about Yesteryear by Caroclare Burke, which is out here with now with HarperCollins.
Beautiful stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Woo!
That's right. Triple R.
All right, whirlwind of eccentric, juicy dramas. Freddie Arthur is back on Breakfast this morning, Freddie.
G'day.
You were last here February?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I was here for a week, wasn't I?
Yeah. What have you been up to since?
Sleeping. Yeah, just all napping. Oh, moving, as I said, moving again and again. Just anywhere. I should say, I'm sitting here wearing a wig.
I thought that was going to be our little secret.
No, was that meant to be a secret? No,
it's your choice.
I'm not wearing a wig. Anyway, so I just on the way here, I've done this a few times lately, right before I leave the house. I'm like, just grab the wig. And then I just wear it somewhere. So.
Just for see what it feels like?
I don't know. I was going to wear it walking in, but I wasn't sure how baffled. I wasn't sure if you'd be like, get her out.
I see. Well, you look like a librarian from Central Casting.
Well, I meant to look like my dad.
Who's a librarian.
Like I say.
Who's a woman named Carol.
Do you just have the one wig, or is there a collection?
No, I have so many wigs. Actually, when I went out, I don't really go out at night. Okay. As in, I don't go out on the town, I mean. But I went out to the retreat and
someone gave me a wig. A bald man just sort of threw a wig at me.
Why?
And I was like, I'll take that. It was a bit sweaty, but
did he give it to you, or he threw it and you picked it up? Like, there's a difference.
Yeah. What did he do? No, he sort of threw it at me, but then he was sort of like, you can have that. So anyway,
is that the wig you're wearing right now?
No. I nearly wore that one, but it's not as fun. It's a red wig. Mm. I want to give it a
wash.
Couple weeks, maybe. I don't know how to wash it. I'm just gonna have to sort of like just leave it out, I think.
And he was bald.
He was bald.
And he's finally found the confidence to embrace life as a bald man.
Oh, true. I didn't even think of that. I gave him the old me.
He did.
Yeah. Somehow. Anyway.
And the glasses, they're not your glasses?
No, they've got no lenses in them.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's good they photograph better that way.
They do. Yes, that's right. Okay, well, I've kind of had a very strange evening last night. I don't know if you're going to be very happy with this, actually, what I've got to say. But anyway, I was leaving the house, I was on the way to a gig, and I was looking at my phone. And because I was looking at my phone, I stepped in a terrible puddle. And the reason I stepped in a terrible puddle is because a pipe burst in my street. Absolutely flooded my street. They had to turn the water off. So I've got a shoe full of water. Reason I was looking at my phone is I was sending a photo to a friend because earlier in that day I had seen the most amazing dog poo.
Oh, God.
Size, colour, shape.
Well, I don't know how I've got the photo. Does anyone want to see it?
I might just step out for a moment.
Yeah, I'll see.
Yes, okay, good. Okay, this is Mom's really,
not got the stomach
really riding on at least I one of you enough has to look.
In my life.
Okay, and then if you hang on. Okay, I've got to set this up. So I'll say to you it's brown.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So far, not that intriguing.
So far, not that intriguing. I've sent this in a couple of group chats, obviously with people's permission. Okay, so look at it and then swipe to the right and you'll see.
Brian, no reaction from you.
Oh,
no, I saw what it was.
Incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
Okay, if it's incredible, give me a look.
Okay. Make sure you put it back
to the right.
I mean, it's... And the shape is... Unmistakable.
You're in charge, Freddie, walking us through what makes this a remarkable defecation.
Well, to me it looks very similar to a well-known body part. So the brightness was way down. Could you even see it?
Yeah, we could work it out.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, give us another look.
I couldn't have... I've gone back to... Look, this has been amazing for me because obviously, you know, I have... I have OCD, very squeamish about germs, very squeamish about, like, any weird, like, sticky substances, whatever. I don't even look at my own poo. The amount of times I've gone back to that picture, it's healed something in me.
It's a dog turd that has fallen out in such a way that it resembles, on the cement, a cock and balls.
Yeah. You'd be able to say that. Oh, my God.
Well, you said body part. It could have been a nose.
Oh, true. Well, I was trying to be subtle. But anyway, I've been you know, sometimes I get compulsive with something. I've been messaging everyone I know saying, hey, do you want to see this photo? It's amazing. Would you like to see it? I've got not very many takers, to be fair.
Yeah. Oh, the response hasn't been...
No.
I think I would be one of them to say, no, I'm good.
I would be.
Don't give a... This is... You don't ask for consent.
No.
Daniel did just say, when you're sending a phallic image, you don't need to ask for consent.
And you would know.
But no one's going to want... But once they're going to... Once it happens,
I've got a lesbian group chat. I said, hey, does anyone want to see this phallic-shaped poo? And it was, no. And then one of them just said, hit me with it. And I gave it to her. She said, this is exactly what I hoped for. She probably hasn't seen one in a while. And then
the proportions of it.
Yeah, the proportions are gorgeous. So anyway, but as you say, with unsolicited whatevers, the other day I got a bloke that I used to date, or not even date, just a bloke I was seeing, maybe a couple of one-night stands, gone to two, anyway, whatever. He messaged me out of the blue, just sends me a video of himself playing the trombone.
Is that a euphemism?
No, it's not.
He's playing the trombone.
It's Frey. Of course it's not a euphemism.
40 seconds. seconds of him playing the trombone.
Did you know he could play the trombone?
No. I thought maybe I should have known, you know? I was like, was this something I was meant to recall?
No context.
Anyway.
No context, just a video of him playing trombone.
Just playing the trombone.
Any text?
This will get it back.
I think he said something like, enjoy Darwin or something. And I was like, oh, okay, was this video from Darwin? And he said, no, it was Brunswick. But anyway, good for him.
Was he busting out like Glenn Miller? What was the sort of...
I've got no idea. Right. I know the Chattanooga Choo Choo, but I didn't know.
It wasn't that.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't know.
Can I also, with the phallic excrement, there was some artwork attached. Yes.
I did that, yes. Right. Yep. I like to do, you know, when someone sees something on the ground and then they add to it? I wish I'd... It's probably still there. It's right near my head. I'm going to go back and see how it's doing. But
so, sorry, is that artwork? You did lean over and do that cement?
No, I did that on my phone.
Right, it's a stick figure.
It's a stick figure to go with the appendage.
Do you think the dog owner is usually responsible and picks it up, but they saw it and they thought, I can't.
I thought the same. Someone said that to me. They thought, no, they've got to leave it. If anyone wants to see it, it's on the corner of Glenwyon Road and Lygon Street. It's just near that, you know, that red energy, what is it called? The servo.
Yeah.
Big red servo. It's just on that corner.
That's enough detail.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe get the chalk out? Do the outline. Yeah.
The trouble is the placement's a bit difficult. They've put it, it's a bit too close to sort of the edge of a part. You've got to, anyway. Be fun if someone would go there and lie down.
Any volunteers meet Freddie on the corner of Fundy.
Yeah. And if you want to see it, send me a message. I'll send you, because I haven't just put it on my story because I think that's a bit of a jump scare.
You could do a warning post.
Yeah. I might end
because
up
we will
that.
Not be posting it on the Breakfaster socials. Oh, it's too on. Much. Speak for yourself. Yeah, that's true.
By the way, the issue with, among friends, I don't think it requires too much consent.
Oh, don't you? I would be horrified. If someone had sent that to me, I would have probably blocked them.
But you can't get doing it!
Contrarian Freddie Arbour. It's like it's a test. Like you send it to your friends and go, I can't believe you let me do that.
Yeah. Well, actually, I went out for this has only happened last night. I went out for dinner with a friend straight after and I had messaged her. I said, hey, can I send it? She said, no, please don't. We went for dinner and I just haven't been able to stop talking about it. And then she said, look, I finished my dinner, show me. And also a lesbian, but she looked at it. So anyway.
Well, there's something very different to being sent and then it exists on your phone as opposed to someone just showing you the screen.
I think there definitely is.
Less contamination.
Yeah.
It's not in your cache.
Yeah, because it's almost like you don't want to keep it. You know what I mean?
You just want to flash it.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you're the guardian.
Yeah. But I mean, I wonder. I might get some messages from people. Might be getting people might say, "Ah, I found one."
You hit Freddie Arthur up on social.
Yeah, Freddie Arthur on Instagram.
Yeah. Thank you. Anyway.
So you're going to Darwin?
Yes, I am going to Darwin, and I did mention the wig, a wig earlier. So just keep that in mind through this conversation. I've been wearing a wig, and so it's very like a short brown hair, very similar to my own coloured hair. Actually.
Just shorter.
Yeah, I thought you might have thought I just had a haircut.
Is this a way to trial haircuts? No, goodness no.
Oh. No. I wouldn't do such a thing. But I it's
that's
just
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine cutting your hair short. I'm not a lesbian.
Yeah, anyway, and then I'm also wearing glasses. And this is actually one of my costumes from my solo show that I'll be doing in Darwin. Because I dress up as my mum, I dress up as my dad, and I sing some just horrendous songs in character. So I'll be doing that in Darwin at Top Floor Comedy. First time in Darwin.
Imagine all the poo you'll see.
Yes. Well, crocodile poo, actually. Terrified of the crocodiles. Absolutely terrified.
Running a zigzag.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't know if that's true. That's
guns, isn't it?
Guns.
Isn't it? Yeah.
So you shoot straight.
Oh, anyway. No, I just probably won't leave the city.
Yeah.
So Anyway, someone gave me some advice. They said if you're scared about the crocodiles, just make sure there's always someone between you and the water.
Yeah, that's right. You only have to be faster than the other
person.
Just
a human shield.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
All right, Freddie Arthur, there's always so much going on.
Yeah.
Thanks for checking in and I hope everything's okay.
Thanks so much. Yep, see ya.
Triple R.
Well rested. Dr. Jen joins us for Weird Science Morning. Dr. Jen.
Good morning. We were actually just talking about sleep off air, which is the perfect segue because, how did we all sleep last night, team? Are we feeling good?
Feeling okay.
Okay. It's a very understated way of saying I have small children, Jen. How do you think I slept?
I'm here.
You are.
Yeah, that's right. What more can you possibly ask from us? Yeah, I mean, not you personally, but we're doing it.
It's a very simple question, right? I feel like it's not an uncommon question to particularly family members. Maybe it's not how you greet your friends, but like when I see my kids in the morning, I just naturally say, "How did you sleep last night?" But it turns out that the answer to that question could be telling us something very, very important about how fast we're aging. So I couldn't resist. I have to tell you. I know sleep can be a bit triggering for people, and aging is certainly triggering. But two really big new studies came out almost on top of each other this month, and together they tell us some really important things about sleep and aging. So the first thing to say is that there's this concept that scientists are pretty excited about these days, which is the concept of biological age. So just in case you haven't heard that before, just to be clear, biological age is different from chronological age. So chronological age is how many candles are there on your birthday cake this year, whereas biological age is looking at essentially how worn in or how worn out perhaps your body is. So I think a good analogy is, let's imagine two cars roll off the production line on the same day. One of them lives in a nice garage, gets serviced every 2 months and goes for a gentle drive every weekend. The other has been doing, 200,000 kilometres on dirt roads and has never been serviced. So they're the same age, but they're in really different condition.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it's how much market value you've lost.
Pretty much, yeah. And our bodies are basically the same, and scientists can measure the biological aging of our bodies using things called aging clocks. So what are aging clocks? It's looking at chemical markers on your DNA, which reflect how, let's say, worn out your body is, and also looking at proteins, which are floating around in your blood. And they can basically reverse engineer how old your tissues behave, regardless of how old you actually are, according to your birthday. Does that make sense? Okay, so this first study, which was published in Nature, so a very important journal, it involved the UK Biobank, which is this massive, incredible, long-running study in the UK of 500,000 people, so very good sample size. And they used data from that to build a whole lot of different ageing clocks across 17 different organs. So the key thing to know is that your organs can age at different rates. So, they looked at the brain separately, the liver, the lungs, the immune system, and depending on your lifestyle, your brain might be aging at one rate and your liver might be aging at a totally different rate. So that's why they do them all separately. Then they took those aging clocks and matched that against people's self-reported sleep information. And they found this really clear U curve. So picture a graph, picture a soup bowl. And the bottom of the bowl, the sweet spot where the aging is happening slowest, is where people were sleeping between 6.5 and 7.75 hours per night. Mm-hmm. So
that's why mine looks like dog shit. That was a joke. Mom. I'm so sorry. We all look terrible.
Mom's crying.
Everyone who's just thinking, geez, Daniel, when did you become such a bastard?
Because I'm not having any sleep.
We were talking earlier about how amazing Mon is coming in so early. Exactly. Every morning.
He had to bring me down.
Actually, it was almost developed self-confidence.
Yeah, it was mostly Mon talking about how amazing she is. It was... Oh.
I love you. We can just have a chat here. Let's leave those other two ragamuffins out of this.
It's really
So, Mon, this is not personally directed at you, but the kicker in this story is that the people who are getting less than 6 hours sleep, their organs are aging faster. But hang on, the people who are getting more than 8 hours of sleep, they are also aging faster, which I think is really surprising because we tend to think that sleep is one of those situations of more is always better. You know, you kind of brag, oh, yeah, I got, you know, gold star for me. I got 9 hours of sleep last night. But this study suggests that's not how it works. Now, you know, the researchers are really clear. They're not suggesting that sleeping too much is causing faster aging. So, you know, we always go back to our correlation causation thing. It might be that if you're regularly sleeping 10 hours a night, there's something else going on. Mm. You might already be unwell. There might be some underlying condition that means you need more sleep. So the long sleep could be a symptom rather than a cause. But on the short sleep side of things, that's much clearer. We know that short sleep is damaging. It's, you know, it messes with our immune systems, our blood sugar, our stress hormones, blood pressure. And we know that the short sleepers in this study were likely to be living with things like depression and anxiety, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, that sort of stuff. Okay, so the picture is U-shaped curve, right? Too little, too much, both bad. There's a sweet spot about 6.5 to a bit under 8 hours of sleep. The second study, which is really important, adds a whole other dimension because so far we've talked about how much you sleep. The second study looked at when you get your sleep. So the question is, how consistent are you about when you get your sleep? So for you guys, having to be up at the same time every morning, turns out that's a really, really good thing. So the researchers looked at around 200 older adults. Their average age was 68. They put activity monitors on their wrists for a week and they tracked everything when they were sleeping, when they were moving, when they were resting, how, you know, when they were getting exercise, all of that stuff, when they were exposed to light. So, you know, they collected all the data that they could, get them to keep diaries as well. And when they checked all of that information against the aging clocks that I measured earlier, it was really clear that the people with the most consistent rhythm, so the people who went to bed at roughly the same time every day, got up at roughly the same time, did exercise at the same time, rested at the same time, they were aging more slowly. Whereas the people whose sleep schedules and activity schedules were all over the place, you know, I have a nap one day, I stay up super late, I get up early, whatever it is, they had bodies that seemed to be aging faster, which makes sense, right? Unfortunately, we know that people who do shift work, they tend to deal with a whole lot more health issues because their bodies are doing one thing and the world's telling them kind of something else. So I don't know, putting these two studies together, it's a pretty powerful story about how we maximise our health when it comes to sleep.
When you say they're ageing faster, what's by how much? Like what's the discrepancy between? Does it say?
I can't tell you like in years. Yeah, I can't say, you know, your liver is a whole 3 years older than the rest of you. I think the key thing to know is that there's just consistent patterns where your biological age and your chronological age aren't matching.
So is there, do you reckon there's a big future where we can clearly, plainly, maybe by going to the GP, learn our biological age, like the, you know, get the feels like temperature of our bodies?
Yeah, I mean, there are already lots of apps out there that are kind of trying to gamify your data by telling you that stuff. So I have a particular app that I like, a particular tracker that I use to help me know when I should run harder and when I should rest. And it has a thing. Every week it updates me and tells me what it thinks my biological age is. And it'll tell me all the levers. So it's, you know, it's taking information from how much I sleep, when I sleep, how much I exercise, my resting heart rate, you know, all of the data it has about me. And it tells me, and it's, you know, I don't believe it's accurate. I don't believe it for a minute, but gee, it's very compelling. If I'm like, damn it, I aged like 3 months in the last week. I need to get more sleep.
So, it's Benjamin Button, maybe.
I wonder if maybe in time, I mean, the data, like it is available, Daniel. Like if you've got the money, and there's probably a whole lot of people out there, absolutely, who have the will and the funds to do this and say, I want to know, you know, tell me, how old is my liver today? How old are my kidneys today? But I just, I mean, I think these studies are good because, I mean, we already knew that sleep matters, right? Like that isn't going to be news to absolutely nobody. But I like the fact that there is a sweet spot. And if 6.5 hours is something you could realistically aim for, then do. You know, that's a really good amount of sleep according to this study. You don't need to be getting 8 or 9 or 10 hours of sleep. And if you are getting a lot of, you know, if you are finding that your body really needs that sleep, potentially that's just you and there is obviously a huge variety out there. But maybe there is something underlying going on that you should go to your GP and do some blood tests and check out what's happening.
I personally value the idea of regularity being important because my sleep is terrible, but it's consistently terrible. And that's...
But, like, it does make a lot of sense, right, because we all have circadian rhythms. We have this internal 24-hour body clock that our bodies run on, and that circadian rhythm tells our cells, you know, it tells our bodies when our cells should repair themselves, when to release hormones, when to fire up the immune system, when to wind down. And when we give our bodies reliable cues to do, you know, this is the time you sleep, this is the time you eat, this is the time you get sunlight, it makes sense that our bodies work really well. And when we screw up that messaging and we give our bodies different cues at different times, it totally makes sense to me that our bodies end up not working as well. And I guess I just, you know, obviously there's caveats to this study. The John Hopkins study, which was that second one about the timing, it is small, 200-odd people, and they only watched their study participants for a week. So, you know, they're not proving that being more consistent in your sleep is gonna save everything. It just shows that there's a link there. And the Nature study, although it was way bigger, so I said 500,000 people, the sleep data is self-reported, which means it's always a bit dodgy because, you know, people do kind of forget things. But I do think there are some good takeaways here. Try and get 6.5 hours of sleep if you can. More than 8 isn't better. And the more actionable one, which I think is really, really important that we can all pay attention to, is just try and be a bit more boring about bedtime.
Yeah.
Go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time. Even on the weekends, do the same thing. Because even though it sounds like it's very boring, not staying out late, you know, a couple of nights a week, it sounds like our liver and our kidneys and our lungs are going to thank us for it. And I guess the thing that I love the most is researchers are saying the next step is they want to actually run trials where they help people stabilize their daily sleeping routines to see if it slows down measurable aging. And I just love, like, imagine if the longevity industry's, you know, billion-dollar answer turns out to be, yeah, just go to bed at the same time every night.
Right.
Time.
Like, no, but they'll have a special little wristwatch that you pay a few hundred dollars for to tell you.
But imagine if you can turn around and say, I don't need that. I just know that at 10:30 I'm going to go to bed.
But it just turns out all those old adages, it's like, oh, beauty sleep is a thing.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Dr. Jen.
Very good.
Yeah, beautiful. And we're all going to hit our boring KPIs.
Good. Do it. Be boring.
Triple R on FM, digital, online and via the app.
I was hanging out with Liz on the couch yesterday. She was eating a mandarin. And what's better than eating a mandarin?
Oh, my God. Mandarin's so good right now.
Eating a mandarin out. Hey! 6:15. Time to wake up. Here we go.
Oh, no. Oh, I didn't even know that was going
to
happen.
You did. Mon insisted off air. She goes, you have to tell the mandarin joke. It's my favourite one. I love it so much.
I do.
Off Mon goes on some, you know, banal but excited diatribe about them being in season.
They'll never know.
Total innocence.
I wanted the smut.
She's just waiting for someone to set it up.
Amanda's on the line now.
Is this your favourite season, Amanda? She was eating mandarin and she had a couple of pieces left and she said to me, Do you want these? And I was like, yep, I'm not above scraps. Mm. I'll have them. There's a few meals at
she
the end.
She can't get through a whole one.
Well, here we go. Hands me the mandarin. You know the kind of core, it has those strands, those thick strands in the middle. They are a deep brown.
Oh, yeah.
I'm picking them off and she was watching me and she goes, yeah, taste it off. What? Then why do I have it?
Poor man.
Why isn't it in the bin? She was just like, oh, I didn't think you were that. You're just not that fussy. I was like, okay.
You take my crap.
I'm not fussy, but I draw the line at off. I also don't want food with mold on it or that has curdled.
But had she eaten, like, most of it?
Yeah, she'd eaten a chunk.
And then was like, I can't eat a whole off mandarin.
Do you want it?
Is the brown bit just tasteless or off? Is it off?
Well, I didn't. I think it was off. Mm. It was a bad one. Mm. I didn't bite into it after that, obviously.
Mm.
I don't want your rancid fruit.
No.
I can get another mandarin.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, yeah, just because I don't have dietary requirements doesn't mean I'm okay with salmonella.
So you're still eating gluten.
So you can eat garbage.
Yeah, it's insane. Piece of bread. Same thing.
You have no standards.
It's like, E. coli.
I'm dating you. have some self-respect.
So obviously, yeah, if you are offering someone a mandarin, it's good form to involve the other person instantly upon opening up the mandarin.
Correct.
Not wait till the end. Yeah, that's the red flag, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so, yeah, you're right. I will have to end this relationship.
Yeah.
Red flag, yeah. Yeah.
All right, got the ick.
it's over. Ick's in. Can't scrub that off.
You weren't happy to share. Like, if you don't deserve, if you can't handle me at my worst mandarin, then you don't deserve to do my best.
But it's been, this brown inner mandarin business has come up quite a bit.
Yeah, has it?
Yeah. And I don't remember it in my life.
I think it's a new variety. I love mandarin. But they're not always bad. No, as in when the brown bit's there, they're fine.
They're fine?
Yeah. Because the fruit is still delicious and sweet and juicy. But I didn't see this one. But all I'm saying is there's a particular variety that has like the little membrane stuff
mm-hmm.
that is like hard and like brown. It's okay. Fine.
And you think it's fine?
Yeah, I think it's just a...
Well, I don't like this new variety.
A bias against ugly fruit.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, that's like, but that's ugly on the inside. And I think that's the bit you don't want
to be
ugly. Oh,
that's what you don't want.
Yeah, I can take a lump on the outside. But I don't want a brown core.
This is like the shallow hell theory of fruit. Yeah.
Great reference. No, I don't know. I think she thinks I'll eat anything because occasionally I eat cold leftovers. And in her mind, that's like taking your life into your own hands. But
what's
I think
wrong?
It's fine.
What kind of things are we talking cold?
Yes, I will eat a cold curry and cold rice. But I think that is fine.
Your life out. A cold curry.
Yeah. Look, I like the congealed fat.
Is this because you are so time poor that you got no time to
She's
eat
not
that?
Time poor.
How dare you? I'm starving. Have naps to fit in.
You roll over from your nap. Oh, it's cold. Oh, well.
It's not left out on the bench. Like, it has been in the fridge.
But then you don't heat it up.
No, who can be bothered?
Oh, everybody.
I can't be bothered staring at the microwave while it counts down.
You
I think
do
it's
something
the clock.
Else.
It makes
you could
it
probably
like...
eat a mandarin while you wait for the curry. Yeah.
No. I think once I see the timer, it's like the longest time of my life.
Yeah, okay.
So, no. Mm. But at least we'll do leftovers and like... reheat them on the stove, which I'm like, what are we doing?
Oh, yeah, I would do that sometimes.
Oh,
sometimes
yeah, and then she's garnishing it. I'm like, yeah. It's leftovers. Stop.
Eat it out of the container, stone cold, where you can't even taste the flavours properly.
Yes, over the sink, like a normal person.
Is the stove less likely to stink the joint up?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. And it heats it evenly.
Yeah, I think she's just trying to be posh.
<Get it out>. that is posh.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking food
is posh. Sometimes she threatens to get rid of the microwave, and I'm like, no way. I would die without a microwave.
I didn't have one for ages, and I was like, then we went so long without having one, and I was like, I don't need one. I'm dead against it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's why, maybe because I'm posh and like eating stuff on stove. But then I got one, and I was like, this does have a utility. It's so good at. Mm-hmm. Reheating food.
Reheating
that's its main purpose. That and like a wheat bag for my sore back. That's the only thing that a microwave can do that you can't heat up otherwise.
You can't heat up a wheat bag. There's no other way.
I think I tried once in a pot. I looked it up. I was like, I want one. I want to use this. And it was like you can put it in a pot. It was just very elaborate. And
what about a dumpling steamer?
Well, I didn't have one of those.
Yeah, it's a good idea, though,
I mean, but even then you get
moisture into your heat pack.
Yeah, all that condensation.
With all due respect, what the fuck would you know?
You're hoofing down cold butter chicken. worrying about the moisture level.
But I will not accept a brown mandarin.
Melbourne's own. Triple R.
Thanks for listening to the Best Bits of Breakfasters. Catch us live on Triple R every weekday morning from 6 till 9 a.m. or listen on demand at rrr.org.au or on the Triple R app. You can get in touch with us via Instagram, Facebook or the Triple R website.